This talk was recorded by Insight Meditation South Bay. For more talks and information, visit www.imsb.org.
I'd like to get a sense first before beginning to talk, and also just like to say I'm going to talk and then have you do some inquiry and share a little bit, and I'll talk some more, we'll meditate a little bit. So what I would like to do is to use this time as an exploration of emptiness and non-self, those ideas and the practice of them in the Buddhist tradition. I actually asked to be able to talk about emptiness and non-self because practicing in Thich Nhat Hanh's tradition and reading his book, The Heart of Understanding, which is his book about the Heart Sutra, which is about emptiness and non-self, I finally understood the meaning of non-self and emptiness in a way that gave me a lot of joy, actually. And because the Heart Sutra is one of the most regularly chanted and read and practiced sutras, one of the shortest also, although there is a very long version, and yet it's very mysterious and it's hard to comprehend. It's the source of great mystery. Right now online, Kaz Ta-Nehisi in Berkeley and Joan Halifax at Upaya Zen Center in Santa Fe are doing an online course, 6 weeks long, an exploration of the Heart Sutra and their translation of it. Many of the main Buddhist teachers have done translations of it. And Thich Nhat Hanh did a translation, which we chant in our community. We've been chanting it for many years. He retranslated it and wrote a very beautiful explanation for why he retranslated it a year ago, just a month or so before he had a stroke. So it's his final gift of thinking writing to our community. And we have a new chant that goes along with his translation. So what I'd like to do tonight is share these chants with you also. And explore what is the meaning of these words, emptiness, these concepts, emptiness and non-self, and how do we practice to realize them. But first, I'd just like to ask you, how many of you have ever encountered the Heart Sutra? How many of you have thought about the concept of emptiness, non-self, which are related but maybe different? Yeah, so it's new for some people. And it's kind of there pervasively in some ways in Buddhist practice. But I'm going to ask you to think for yourself, what do those words mean to you? What is emptiness? You don't have to say out loud, but just bringing some awareness to that question, what is emptiness? What does it mean? Okay. So I'm going to play the chant for you. And this is the original chant that we've been chanting for many years, and this is Thich Nhat Hanh's original translation of the Heart Sutra. I've given you copies so you can read along with it. So it's on the third actual physical page. And before I play it, let me just tell you a little bit of history about the Heart Sutra. The Heart Sutra in and of itself is kind of mysterious because it is said that Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion, also called Guanyin or Canon, different Asian countries call Avalokiteshvara different names. Avalokiteshvara is a male form. Guanyin and Canon are female forms of the same Bodhisattva of compassion. And the story goes that the Heart Sutra was the answer Avalokiteshvara gave to a question Sariputra asked. And Sariputra was one of the Buddha's main disciples, reportedly a very beautiful person, extremely wise, very beloved. And reportedly, Sariputra asked Avalokiteshvara how he should train other people to practice. And Avalokiteshvara responded, and the response is the Heart Sutra. Now, the interesting thing about this is Avalokiteshvara, who's part of the Mahayana tradition, was living in the year 100 somewhere between 100 and 300 BC to AD, or it's called BCE to CE or whatever. So that is about 500 years after the Buddha lived. And the Sariputra was also living when the Buddha lived. So how did Sariputra ask Avalokiteshvara this question? So I think that the whole story embodies the concept of emptiness. No coming, no going, no after, no before. It's a lot of pairs of opposites. So that it's impossible in sort of time and space to imagine that this could have happened. But as the story goes, and I think, Mike, you asked me this question, Avalokiteshvara somehow intuited the Buddha's realization of the teaching of emptiness, experiencing the Buddha's teaching from a time when the Buddha was in deep and profound meditation and came to this realization, and somehow responded to Sariputra's question across time and space. So I find that very delightful. So this is the Heart Sutra. And as I said, many teachers have their own translations, but the translations are all just versions of these same words. So I'm going to play the chant so you can hear it. And you can read along. Are you ready?
Heart of perfect understanding. Them from ignorance to death and decay.
One of the purposes for listening to chants is that realization and understanding are different from knowledge. So we can explore trying to understand these things with our minds, but also just experiencing them is another way of grasping and beginning to understand. So hearing this chant periodically, and if anybody wants to have this, you can email me. I don't know if they have my email. Do they, Sharon? You could get in touch with me, and I can send you this chant. So just letting it sink in for a minute. Just breathing in and breathing out. And then I'm going to have you all pair off and do a little bit of inquiry. First, we'll sit for a moment with a question and then share a little bit about what arises in your mind. You're going to be asking each other this question. Have any of you done inquiry before where you ask a person a question and listen to what they say, and you let them talk for a while, then they ask you the question, you listen to what they say, you don't really respond or ask further questions. It's just kind of an inquiry practice. So the question is going to be, who are you? What is yourself? And I'm going to be, I'll give you just a certain amount of time, so maybe 1 minute to reflect, so without talking. How would you explain who are you to another person? What is yourself? So who is yourself? What is this self? And when you tell someone else, who are you? What are you talking about? So just reflecting for a moment, and then I'll sound the bell. And one person can share for about a minute. I'll sound the bell again. Then we'll just be quiet for a little bit. I'll sound the bell again. The second person can share. Sound the bell again, and there'll be a little bit of time for just chatting back and forth. So just exploring the question, who are you? So just for a moment, sitting in silence, just reflecting, who am I? So, coming to rest when you're finished with your sentence, and you'll have a little bit more time to share. And just resting and noticing what you've heard or what you've said when you're finished. Just letting it sink in, what you've heard, what you've said. If you were the listener, what thoughts arose as you were listening? Through the speaker, is your mind replaying what you said? What are you experiencing in your body, in your emotions, in your mind, in the presence of having described for a moment who you are? In the Hindu tradition, there's a teacher named Ramana Maharshi who only asked that question. That was all he did. Who am I? Let me just give you another minute or two to share back and forth, just to discuss with each other. What's your response to this question? So thinking together about the question, what is the self and who am I? Anything you'd like to say? to each other. So thinking about the question now and sharing with each other the same pairs. Just you don't have to have one person talking and one listening. You can just chat freely. And I'd like to add one more question for you to share with your pair, with your partner. What does it mean to have a non-self? What does non-self mean? Why would we practice non-self? Would anyone like to say anything that came out of that discussion? Any questions or any observations that might be worth sharing with the whole group? Did anyone have any difficulty thinking about the topic of non-self? It's a very challenging topic. It's very mysterious. So the Heart Sutra, which is part of the Prajnaparamita Sutras, which came up with Mahayana Buddhism, is said to be one of the most important sutras there is. It contains the teaching on wisdom and enlightenment. And just to place it, there are the Four Noble Truths in Buddhism, the Eightfold Path, which is the path out of suffering. The fourth noble truth is that there's a path out of suffering. That path out of suffering is the Eightfold Path. All the different right view and right mindfulness and right diligence and right action and so forth. Right view is actually the path that has to do with the Heart Sutra and the Sutra on Emptiness and Non-Self. And why would that be? It's quite mysterious, actually. And why is it called the Heart Sutra? So these are the questions I asked myself. I wanted to give you this talk tonight because of an understanding I have about this that would take me about 2 minutes to say. So I had to do some research to offer you a little bit more. And I started wondering these questions. Why the Heart Sutra? Why does emptiness lead to compassion? Why is this called the Heart Sutra? Prajna is wisdom. Prajnaparamita is the transcendent or great wisdom. So the Prajnaparamita Sutras are a collection of sutras that have to do with wisdom. And the Heart Sutra is said to be maybe the most important one. The Diamond Sutra is another one. It's called the diamond that cuts through illusion. That's Thich Nhat Hanh's way of describing it. Also has to do with emptiness, but in a somewhat different way. And the Heart Sutra is the most fundamental one, which is why I'm giving you the Heart Sutra, as impenetrable as it is to read those words and listen to that chant, I think, at least for me it is. Anybody else experience it as impenetrable, like you don't know what he's talking about? So just in thinking about this, what I'd like to do is share my understanding from Thich Nhat Hanh or Thay, because he has a unique way of explaining this. So one of the teachings goes like this. If you look at your handout, you look at your piece of paper, not the words, just the paper, can you see a cloud? Can you see it? Can anybody see a cloud in their paper? You want to say something about how you can see the cloud?
And this could apply to anything. Basically, you see in the paper everything that helped to produce what the paper is, which includes the tree that the paper was milled from, the ground that the tree grew in, the soil that nourished it, as well as the rain that fell from the sky and the clouds that produced the rain and the sun that produced the clouds and the rain. And, you know, and everything is the same. I mean, you look deeply enough, the raisin that you're eating, and anything that you look at, you can see the interconnectedness, the dependencies between that thing and the things that produced it.
And the phrase for that in Buddhism is dependent co-arising. I think that's the right phrase. Dependent co-arising. Does anybody know? I think that's right. Dependent origination, yes. I think of it as co-arising. Yeah, dependent origination. So everything is dependent on everything else for arising. So yeah, without the cloud, there's no paper. You could also see a tree. You can see all the work that went into this, all the factory workers, the factory itself. You can see everything, all the elements that made this paper. If you take away any one of those elements, what happens? No paper. No paper. Paper, no paper. we are the same. Everything is the same. You take away the elements that make us up, we no longer exist. And the phrase for this, which helps make sense of this mysterious Heart Sutra, is, this paper is empty of a separate self. So emptiness actually means fullness. So this paper is full of the cosmos. It is made of the earth, the rain, the sun, the stars, the trees, the clouds, much hard work, the factory. All of that is in this paper. So it is empty of a separate self. It has no separate self. It only exists to the extent that it is made up of all those things and is connected to all those things. So when I read that first, and I read it first in a book called Under the Rose Apple Tree for young adults that Thich Nhat Hanh wrote, I often like the things that people write for children because they are much more easy to understand. And so this immediately let me understand what I've always thought, the idea that everything is connected and we are all connected. That always sounded very nice to me, but I just always thought, well, what does that really mean? You know, yeah, so we're all connected. But if you look at yourself, what are you made of? Actually, before answering that question, if you look at the paper, where did the paper begin? When was this paper born? If you look back in time, how do you know when the paper started? The Big Bang. The Big Bang. And for the Big Bang, was that the beginning, actually?
It always was after the other Big Bang.
We don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult to find the beginning. So what Thich Nhat Hanh says in this same book, and this is an essay called You Were Never Born. So we all think we were born when we sort of were delivered from our mother's body. But actually, we were born also when the sperm and the egg came together. But is that really when we were born? That sperm and that egg were part of our parents and held the potential for us and that becoming of us before they ever came together. And our parents came from their parents. Where is the beginning? No beginning, no ending. This is the teaching of no birth, no death, which I still find it hard to understand, even though I'm telling you I understand this now. The idea of no birth, no death is one of the most profound ones and difficult for me because it's so real to us if someone dies. Thich Nhat Hanh himself, we thought he was dying. He had a very massive stroke last November. He is surviving, but he's no longer a speaking person. So the Thich Nhat Hanh that spoke is no longer here. He has changed. But he has been teaching us for a long time. We call the birthday and the end day moments of continuation, not death and not birth, moments of continuation. So when we're born of our mother, it's a moment of continuation from many things that came before. When we pass away into another form, we have died. So the thing is, it's not that we're not gone. And this is very helpful to understand too. It's the both and of Buddhist thinking, which is a Far Eastern way of thinking, as I've learned it. So yes, we're gone. Yes, we did die, if we died. Yes, the raisin got eaten, and it's no longer here in our hand. Yes, this paper can be burned and no longer be here anymore. Our form changes form. So in that sense, we don't die, because everything just keeps changing form in our universe. Nothing's created and nothing's destroyed. So we both are gone and aren't gone. And the beautiful teaching about this, which I learned and really focused on when my mother died about 2.5 years ago, and my father had already died a few years before that, was that when we look in the palm of our hand, and this is a practice that we do, we look at the palm of our hand, and I can see my parents in the palm of my hand, because I know that my parents are in every single cell of me, and they are here in me. So this is not some sort of philosophical notion. It's philosophical, but it's also real. And somehow, after practicing this for some time, for me, looking in the palm of my hand connects me to my parents and all my ancestors. So this is what comes from practice, not the thinking about and trying to analyze it, but just the realization of no birth, no death. They are gone, and I have grief, and I miss them, and they are here, and that gives me comfort. So it's both things. It's not that there's no self. There's self and no self. And the way that comes together is there's no separate self. So we are full of all our ancestors. I am full of all my ancestors. But I have no separate self. There's no Renee that exists apart from all of what I've been connected to all my life. Not just my blood ancestors also. My spiritual ancestors, the earth, is all a part of me and everything I've ever experienced. The same for all of us. This is the meaning of the Heart Sutra, that everything just continues. Which has to do with emptiness, empty of a separate self, full of the cosmos. Non-self doesn't mean non-self. It means no separate self. So I'm going to read you a little passage from Thich Nhat Hanh, where he explains why he retranslated the Heart Sutra again. Because he had already translated it once. And we've been using that for many, many years, and I think it's quite beautiful now that I'm used to it. First time I heard it, I just thought, what is this weird thing? What does it mean? It has no meaning. I don't understand. And now I listen to it, and I feel full of joy, actually. So he retranslated the Heart Sutra, and I'm just going to read this to you. The reason he speaks about himself in the third person, the reason Thay must retranslate the Heart Sutra is because the patriarch who originally recorded the Heart Sutra was not sufficiently skillful enough with his use of language. For this reason, it has caused much misunderstanding for almost 2,000 years. Thay would like to share with you two stories. The story of a novice monk that paid a visit to the Zen master, to his Zen master, and the story of a bhikkhu, bhikkhus are the disciples of the Buddha, who came with a question to the eminent master, Thuy Trung, and this was a Buddhist master in Vietnam. In the first story, the Zen master asked the novice monk, "Tell me about your understanding of the Heart Sutra." The novice monk joined his palms and replied, "I have understood that the five skandhas are empty." Ah, five skandhas. How many of you know what that means? Actually, there's a very nice little quote I have over here about the five skandhas. What we call I is only the five skandhas, which is form, perceptions, feelings, mental formations, and consciousness. And these are all constantly transforming entities. This is what we are made of, actually. I doubt that when any of you asked, "Who are you?" the person said, "I am five skandhas." I am form and perception, mental formations and consciousness and feelings. Maybe somebody did. Did anybody say that? You did. Okay, so the novice monk joined his palms and replied, "I have understood that the five skandhas are empty." And again, so form and feelings and perceptions and consciousness, all these things, mental formations, our reactions, all of our sense organs and sense impressions, everything is empty of a separate self. They all rely on each other. They have to coexist in order to exist. And in that sense, they are empty of separate selves themselves. So all the parts that make each of us up is empty of a separate self. So what the novice monk said, "I understand the emptiness. There are no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body or mind, no forms, sounds, smells, tastes, feelings, or objects of mind. The six consciousnesses do not exist. The 18 realms of phenomena do not exist. The 12 links of dependent arising do not exist. And even wisdom and attainment do not exist." This is a teaching of the Heart Sutra. The novice monk was repeating it correctly. So the master asked him, "Do you believe what it says?" And the novice monk said, "Yes, I believe what it says. I truly believe what it says." "Come closer to me," the Zen master instructed the novice monk. When the novice monk drew near, and I'm going to use myself as, imagine the master is here and I'm here. I'll be the novice. The Zen master immediately used his thumb and finger to pinch and twist the novice's nose. In agony, the novice cried out, "You're hurting me, teacher, you're hurting me." The Zen master looked at the novice and said, "Well, just now you said the nose doesn't exist. But what if the nose doesn't, if the nose doesn't exist, then what's hurting?" Now that I've already told you about separate self, this doesn't seem very, but this is the confusion and mystery of the Heart Sutra. Until you understand that non-self and emptiness only mean connection, this is the confusion that the Heart Sutra creates. So there is this sense of a striving for enlightenment, striving for not having an ego, not having a self, not being attached to the self or anything. I lived in India for 3 years, and I argued with every single teacher about this non-attachment idea. And I finally actually understood it when I heard that the Dalai Lama collects Rolex watches, and he fully enjoys all of them, and Mustang cars, but he would not suffer if he lost them all tomorrow. So I thought, attachment. Non-attachment means attachment and non-attachment. You can be attached in a sense of enjoying something matters to you. But the non-attachment frees you from suffering. You can let it go. You can let it be. So is this making any sense to you over there? You?
Actually, yes, it is. Yes. Mm-hmm. I came with a completely different notion, but I had no idea where to start.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay. So the second story. The eminent master, Tuệ Trung, was a lay Zen master who had once served as the mentor for the young king, Tran Nhan Tong, in 13th century Vietnam. Thich Nhat Hanh comes from Vietnam, so his lineage is that lineage. One day, a bhikkhu, or disciple, paid him a visit to ask him about the Heart Sutra. "Respected eminent master, what does the phrase, form is emptiness, emptiness is form, really mean?" At first, the eminent master remained silent. And then after a while, he asked, "Bhikkhu, do you have a body?" "Yes, I do." "Then why do you say that the body does not exist?" The eminent master then continued, "Do you think that in empty space there is form?" "No," he said, "I do not see that there is form." "Then why do you say that emptiness is form?" The bhikkhu stood up, bowed, and went on his way. But the master summoned him back in order to recite to him the following gatha. A gatha is a little poem. And this is the Heart Sutra gatha. "Form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Is a skillful means created temporarily by the Buddha of the three times. Emptiness is not form. Form is not emptiness. Their nature is always pure and illuminating, neither caught in being nor in non-being." I think of this as a giant koan, actually. Sort of impenetrable, and yet Thay has made it penetrable, which I'm very grateful for. In this story, the eminent master Tuệ Trung seems to contradict the Heart Sutra and challenge the sacred formula, form is emptiness and emptiness is form, which is considered inviolable in the Prajnaparamita literature. But Thay believes that the eminent master went too far. The master was not able to see that the mistake doesn't rest in the formula, form is emptiness, but it rests in the unskillfulness of the line. Therefore, in emptiness, there is no form. I realize that just hearing this and hearing me read this may just sort of wash over you. So you do, let's see, do you have this? You don't have this in your handout, but if you want this, please write to me and I will send you the complete set of everything I'm using for tonight. So, okay. So, the problem lies in the line, therefore in emptiness there is no form. According to Thay, the way in which words are used in the Heart Sutra, right from the beginning up to the line, no birth, no death, not defiled, not immaculate, not increasing, not decreasing, is already perfect. Thay's only regret, so this is Thich Nhat Hanh saying, my only regret is that the patriarch who recorded the Heart Sutra did not add the following four words. No being, no non-being, immediately after the four words, no birth, no death, because these four words would help us transcend the notion of being and non-being. and we would no longer get caught in such ideas as no eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue. The nose of the novice monk is still sore even today. So I'm not going to go on further with this. It's lots of thoughts and words and ideas. But the point of this, and for me the solution in a way, is the use of the word and. So the both and way of thinking in Buddhism, instead of the either or way of thinking of most of us in the West, I always like to say, especially myself coming from a Catholic family, experienced a lot of either or thinking. That's probably true of lots of people, not just Westerners. But the broadening of awareness into both and is very helpful. So no birth and birth, no death and death is how I think of this. It's what makes sense to me. No self and self, no separate self is the solution to that. So that everything really is connected. Yes.
I'm fairly new to, learning about Buddhism, but listening to that reading, I wondered to myself, if everything is nothing and nothing is everything and we're all connected, where in that approach to life is there a sense of morality of why do things matter, you know, if everything is nothing and there's no attainment? I mean, does that make any sense?
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's addressed somewhere, and I just haven't read it.
No, that's a good question. So the idea is that suffering arises because we become attached to form, and we become attached to self, and we become attached to the sort of intrinsic sense that things don't change. And so this is really a teaching on all things change also. Impermanence is also part of the teaching on emptiness and non-self. So the way I like to think of this in terms of practice and in terms of answering that question for myself, why is this the compassion training? Why is this the compassion sutra? And I get that answer from Pema Chodron. So Pema Chodron has this wonderful phrase, I love it anyway, everyone is just trying to get comfortable. Everyone's just trying to get comfortable. And I pair that with what I've learned from Thich Nhat Hanh, which is that all of us are the product of the causes and conditions of our lives. So that we don't know when we began, but we do know that we inherited lots of things from our ancestors. And we acquired lots of things from our immediate ancestors and from all the other experiences of our lives. I think of it as hardware and software of ourselves, actually. And so that in any one moment, no matter what we're doing or what reactivity, we call it habit energy, we may be manifesting, or someone else may be manifesting, that reactivity or habit energy, whether good or bad, is simply a product of the causes and conditions of our lives, all of the ever-changing things that we consist of. So in that sense, there's no fixed form. There's form, but no fixed form. It's ever-changing. There's no thought in a way, but there's always thought, but it's ever-changing. So if you bring that into this and you realize, let's say you're suffering in some way. Let's say you're suffering because you think you're suffering because of someone else. You need them to be different than the way they are. Does anybody in this room have that feeling? Most of us do. Not everybody, I think, but many of us. So we're suffering because that person is not what we want them to be. We think they should be different than how they are. If we realize, and this isn't just an intellectual understanding, if we begin to realize that both of us are involved in this, that each of us is the product of the causes and conditions, both of us are manifesting our habit nature, and both of us are probably wanting the other one to be different than they are, then everybody's just trying to get comfortable starts to make sense, that there's a feeling in us. It's true in insects and plants even. We go toward what we like. We go away from what we don't like, you know, in myriad ways. And so if we recognize, so I come from a family where a lot of people, including myself, have some obsessive compulsive traits, We do not have OCD, as my brother is fast to point out, and I am too. But we have some compulsive and obsessive traits. And for anybody with those traits, I don't know if any of you have those traits, but they're very helpful for being successful in, you know, careers and so forth, or music or art. But when it comes up, you know, when you come up against what you can't control, which is generally other people or yourself, if you don't like something in yourself, you have a lot of suffering. And you get very frustrated because your brain, your error detector in your brain is firing off and it won't stop. And so you're needing something to be different. If you realize this, I realize this because of my own experience, that's really, it originates in a feeling. The suffering originates in a feeling. It's a felt sense in the body. And it's not comfortable. And thoughts immediately arise, that has to be different, this has to change. You know, that picture really needs to be straight, and I can't rest until it's straight, just to make it very concrete. So if you bring this in and realize if someone is agitating you, they are just, first you calm yourself down. So with mindfulness, the mindfulness of the breath and the body come first. So you calm your body. This is our practice in Thich Nhat Hanh's tradition. You calm and steady yourself. And then you recognize, okay, this person is not doing this on purpose right now, even if they are doing it on purpose right now. That choice is the product of everything that came before it, and they actually in this moment can't be doing anything different. Doesn't mean we don't have free will to change, but it's very hard to change habit nature. So this turns into a compassion practice, and this is the practice of all things change. And it's the practice of emptiness. So their behavior is empty of a fixed identity. It may be different in a different situation. We may be different in a different situation. So I don't know if I'm now going too far afield. Is this making sense? To me, this is how compassion comes into it. And in my reading and preparing for tonight, I read what Pema Chodron has to say about this whole concept of emptiness. And she talks about how she practices the practice of emptiness. And it's beautifully simple. She says she practices emptiness by when she's going for a walk or when she's just sitting, just letting her mind rest free of thought. And for her, that's the experience of emptiness. It doesn't mean thoughts aren't going to come back and they aren't going to have meaning, or she isn't going to write them down and become famous or whatever. But they're always changing, and they are not her. They're a part of her, and they're always arising and falling away. Does that help? So this is how I make sense of why the Heart Sutra, which is the Sutra on Emptiness and Non-Self, which sounds kind of cold and a little bit scary, turns into the teaching on compassion and acceptance in a way. The final line of the Heart Sutra is Gate Gate Paragate Parasam Gate Bodhisvaha. I'm going to teach you this. So I think it's in the Heart Sutra copy that you have. Yes, it's the last three lines. And in the chant, we repeat it three times. So what that means, gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisvaha, it means gone, gone, gone to the other shore beyond. Gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisvaha, gone, gone, gone to the other shore. All the way beyond to the other shore. What does that mean? The other shore is the ultimate dimension. So we live in an historical dimension where things are real. I can touch this thing. If somebody tweaks my nose hurts. And there's an ultimate dimension that's beyond that. And by realizing these teachings, which I think takes who knows how much practice and how much, not just thinking about it, practicing various practices, you start to travel to the other shore. Now, I read one little essay that talked about how the Diamond Sutra is a little different, and it's talking about emptiness. And it says that the Diamond Sutra is actually, after you get to the other shore, then what do? You come back and help people. And so I thought that was quite beautiful. So there's action built into the Heart Sutra. It's not enough to have wisdom. It's not enough to have enlightenment. But actually practicing, offering, that's the, you know, becoming a bodhisattva or whatever that in the Mahayana tradition, which is becoming an entity that helps others, relieves other people in the world of suffering. So once you realize this and you attain this realization, the idea is that then it's, your responsibility to help other people too, if you so choose. So again, there's compassion in that. So let's just say it together. Gate, 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 para gate, para sam gate, bodhi svaha. Let's see if we can sing it. Let me see. Gate, gate, para gate, para sam gate, bodhi svaha. Gate, gate, para gate, para sam gate, bodhi svaha. Gate, gate, para gate, para sam gate, bodhi svaha. Bodhisvaha means hallelujah. It means wisdom. Well, the Bodhi part is the wisdom based on the insight that all things are one. And the Svaha is hallelujah. Hooray. All hail. It's just a kind of celebration. Yes, we've achieved this. Actually, we go to the other shore and we celebrate. But then with the Diamond Sutra, we come back and help. Yeah, we're very busy. So the beauty of this is the mystery of it, and I hope that I've been able to share in a way that has some meaning, a way of practicing this with this and experiencing some of the reality of it. This is what Thich Nhat Hanh's gift is for me, anyway, that he makes it real. It's not just an idea anymore. I can understand it. And I have one more story. Hold on. It's the back of the second page. It starts out with non-self. It starts out with the Emily Dickinson poem, I'm nobody, who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us, don't tell. They'd banish, you know. How dreary to be somebody. How public, like a frog. To tell one's name the livelong day to an admiring bog. So we did the looking into the palm of your hand. That's the practice where I can see my parents. We can see all our ancestors in the palm of our hand. And the no coming, no going idea, the no birth, no death. One of the most, for me, comprehensible stories to illustrate that is the story of the wave and the water. The wave comes and then it goes. For the water, there's no coming, no going. No after, no before. Looking at the dimension of the wave, which is the historical dimension, so we all alive today are in our historical dimension, we see that the wave seems to have a beginning and an end. The wave can be high or low compared to other waves, more or less beautiful, there or not there, there now but later not there. All these notions are there when we first touch the historical dimension, birth and death, being and non-being, high and low, coming and going, and so on. But we know that when we touch the wave more deeply, we touch water. The water is the other dimension of the wave. It's the ultimate dimension. If the wave is capable of touching the water within herself, if the wave can live the life of water at the same time, she won't be afraid of all these notions. And this is what it means to go to the other shore, even as we're alive. And we start to realize these teachings. We can realize the reality, the truth of wave and water. Ultimate dimension and historical dimension. Beginning and ending, birth, no birth and death, being and non-being, non-fear, will bring the wave solidity and joy. So we're identifying with the wave in our historical dimension. When we continue later, we'll become part of the water again, connected to all things. So the nature of water is the nature of no birth and no death, no beginning and no end. So, without any illusions that this is really that easy to understand, I do hope that it's become a little bit more understandable, realizable. So I did not give us 5 minutes to reflect in the middle of this, but let's sit for a minute now. And just to tell you, I've given you the translation, the new translation, based on the stories about why Tai did the new translation. The new translation reflects those changes. And instead of being called the Heart of Understanding, the new Heart Sutra by Thich Nhat Hanh is called the Insight That Brings Us to the Other Shore. And the music that goes with it, I also included. So for those of you who are musicians, the chant is there. There are three lines on the sheet music. The middle line is the one you can use for chanting. And if any of you do want any of these resources, including the music, please do feel free to write to me and I'll send them to you. Okay, and I'll stay after if anybody wants to talk or ask questions. Actually, before we sit, let's just move our body a little bit. Just drawing some circles with the shoulders and breathing. In one direction and then the other. The elbows. And breathing. This is informal Qigong. Breathing. And with the hands. Letting your dolphins dive into the beautiful water that is the ultimate dimension. And the feet, just squeezing and flexing the toes and drawing circles with the feet. And maybe a little bit of a gentle spinal twist. And breathing. And then coming to rest in the feeling of our breathing and just noticing what may arise after all this talking. So just breathing in and breathing out.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.